It's an honor to welcome the Notably Texan, a band leader, singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and a founding father of the progressive country scene in the Austin Sound. Mr. Bob Livingston joins me via telephone tonight. Really appreciate you being here.
Hey, thanks a lot. Good to be here. Good to meet you.
Are you in Austin?
I'm in Austin here in my office on Watchful Fox Drive out in South Austin.
And, excellent. I want to let everybody know that Bob Livingston is performing Saturday night at Harmony House in Ravenna, and we're really thrilled to get a chance to chat to you for the first time here on Notably Texan. For people that have not studied up on your bio, Bob, let's talk a little bit about some of your early years. You were born in San Antonio, but I believe you grew up in Lubbock, right?
The formative years, you know, like I took off with my parents. They worked in the church. They worked for Methodist Church, the church business, and they were activity. My father was an activities director. My mother was the editor of the executive secretary of the church. And so we took off from Lubbock in 1959, from San Antonio in 1959, landed in Lubbock just about June of 1959, and Buddy Holly had that plane crash in February of 59, so
right.
I missed out on Buddy, and I lived there for 10 years in 69, so those really informative years, you know, of grade school all the way up to going to Texas Tech was spent in Lubbock.
That's cool, and that I believe that's also where you kind of got your start in music, along with some other up-and-comers that have become some pretty big names in Texas music.
Yeah, so there was a definite music scene. My brother was a musician and guitar teacher at one of the music stores down there. He was Jesse Taylor's first guitar teacher.
Wow.
And so I kind of learned from him, and there was a lot of great bands. And, you know, Gary Nunn, who, wrote London Homesick Blues,
yes.
Gary P. Nunn, he was in a rock and roll band called the Fabulous Sparkles.
Oh, really?
And Ely was in a rock and rock band. There was a lot of rock and roll was really big, but Gary was a rocker. You know, I used to go out, there was these two clubs right together, the Village Swinger and the Music Box, and they would pack these places. It was, the Music Box was kind of like the Cavern, real, you know, just a concrete bunker.
Okay.
And, they had some of the best bands, and that's
nice.
Where I first really got to know all those guys.
Now, speaking of clubs, I understand that you actually opened your own folk club in Lubbock in the 60s. Is that true?
Yeah, well, it kind of started out. I'd first met Ely. It was sometime in about, it's got to be 68, and I'd seen him play this gig, and he was solo, had real long hair, and he was sitting on a twin reverb amp with this Gibson guitar
okay.
plugged into it, and he had a hi-hat, you know, like a drum hi-hat,
yeah.
and he was keeping time with that, so he's like this one-man band
okay.
playing all this stuff, and I was like, oh, God, this is the great, and I, you know, went to the pawn shop the next day, got me a hi-hat,
okay.
and borrowed my brother's amp, and so I was just trying this out as an act, you know, as well, and I thought I needed an outlet for it, and there was this ice cream shop called Ron's Ice Cream on University Avenue there, and in the basement was this just empty place, and I asked him, what do you think about opening a little place? So we had pizza and music probably 3 days a week. It was really mainly Friday and Saturday, occasionally Sunday.
Right.
And, you know, I had a lot of frat rats down there, and I'd sit on that amp and it was a Rickenbacker amp, and I'd played a Gibson electric and do that hi-hat, play Proud Mary, and, you know, just kind of mainly cover stuff, occasionally
sure.
some of my stuff, but it was mainly just to get those guys drinking beer and eating pizza, and the place would be packed, and then I started hiring Ely on Sundays to come down, and then I became the bouncer, and I'd have to go around and tell them I'm going to beat them up if they didn't shut up and listen to this guy.
Nice. So, wow. So you've really kind of had your hands in all sides of the whole club scene, I guess, not only as a performer, but even as a bouncer. That's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it was, of course, it's all for the music.
Sure. Boy, the struggles we go through for the things we love, right?
Oh, yeah. In 69, I was going to Tech, got a good draft lottery number,
uh-huh.
and I quit school the next day.
Oh, really?
So, and that ended that period of my Lubbock sojourn. I was gone.
Gotcha. And is that when you headed out to New Mexico?
Got as far as Red River and got me a little gig in a place called the Riverview Inn. I was just playing basically for room and board and tips. Down the street, there was this little club called the Outpost, and it was run by three guys from Dallas, and their little group was called Three Faces West, and it was Rick Fowler, Wayne Kidd, and Ray Wiley Hubbard.
A bunch of unknowns at the time, of course.
Except in that circuit.
Okay.
They were just hilariously great and had a shtick. And would do bits and do these songs, and all the songs that they did were, you know, by folk singers I'd never heard before. I mean, they might do a Gordon Lightfoot song,
right,
or something, but it was an obscure Gordon Lightfoot song.
Okay,
so they,
right,
always tried to, you know, get stuff that people weren't really that familiar with. And but of all the songs, you know, the Johnny Vandiver, Keith Sykes, Tom Rush, some folks like that, and then they did these songs by Mike Murphy. He was just called Mike Murphy at the time.
That's right.
And they did Wildfire, and this was way back then. He'd already written it, but it just hadn't seen the light of day, really.
Okay. And so, that band really inspired you, didn't they?
Oh, I knew what I wanted to be, and I was a live musician, but I didn't really know. I was just green, you know. I was wet,
yeah,
behind the ears and pretty green. And when I saw these guys up close and personal, I just said, this is what it takes. I mean, and they were accessible. I mean, I had seen live, you know, Lubbock would bring in all these big name acts and stuff. And I'd seen a lot of the local rock bands and everything, but these guys were my kind of music,
right,
which was folk, more folk. They had great harmonies, and they were accessible. We became friends, so suddenly I'm right there with them, and Hubbard and I wrote songs together, and I had a great summer, and then came back the next summer. Actually, that was in 68, and the next summer is when I got the good draft lottery number, came back again, but this time I was heading further west, took off for Los Angeles.
That's right. I think you had even more involvement at that time with Michael Murphy when you moved off to Cali, right?
Well, I go to California, I got a record deal on Capitol Records, and they gave me a little bit of money. I bought this Datsun pickup truck and a Martin guitar.
Okay.
And I was, trying to get ready to make my record. And Capitol was awash with money from the Beatles, and they were hiring people right and left and throwing it on the wall to see what stuck.
Okay.
And so I was one of those guys. And so I hadn't made the record yet, but I had this money. You know, I was like, suddenly I had more money than I had ever had in my life.
Sure.
And it was only, you know, $7,000 or $8,000, but back then it's,
yeah, that's momentous.
70,000,
yeah.
I don't know what, but you know, and so I was driving down this, you know, literally LA freeway, and I saw this hitchhiker, and I picked him up, and it was, you know, if I hadn't have picked this guy up, I probably wouldn't be talking to you right now.
Wow.
The way I see it, because it turned out he was an auto mechanic from Germany. We traded each other our life stories. We were just talking. I told him I'm a musician. I'm out here trying to do. He says the only other Texan I know is from Dallas. He's a musician too. His name is Mike Murphy.
Wow.
And it was just this cosmic meet. And I just said, I can't believe it. And I gave him my name and number. And I said, if you ever see him again, I don't, you know, how many mechanics call their client, you know? And I just thought I'd never see this guy again. And
sure.
So I took off and dropped him off. And that night, Murphy called me.
Really?
What are you doing? Who are you? Why are you here? This guy said I should call you. And I said, well, I met Three Faces West. You know, I'm just a big fan of your music. I think you're just some of the greatest stuff I'd ever heard. And he goes, well, you're a genius, and we need to meet.
Wow.
So he lived in Wrightwood, California, which was in the foothills of the San Gabriel Mountains up above San Bernardino. It was, you know, just a straight shot down to L.A. or Palm Springs or anything.
Okay.
And he lived up there and told me to come up and visit him, and I did. And that day he said, you got to move here. You just got to get a place. Let's go look around. There's places for rent.
Wow.
And so I found a little place, and I moved up there. And suddenly everything was, you know, hopping in that regard. We wrote some songs, and we became friends. At some point, though, my record deal never did come through, and they released me along with 150 other acts.
Oh,
from
no.
Capitol, and fired the president, fired everybody. You know, it's just like cleaned house.
No
EMI
kidding.
Owned at Capitol at the time. Suddenly, I'm out of a deal, don't know what I'm going to do. I had been playing all these, this restaurant chain out there, you know, just basically playing, having to play cover songs.
Oh, man.
To support myself. And Murphy just said, well, what are you doing? I said, I don't know what I'm going to do. And he said, well, let's go back. I got some gigs in Texas, Colorado. Come on, play with me. And he handed me a bass guitar. I had not played bass. And he said, how do you learn? It's real simple. We took off and went back to Texas.
That's an amazing story. I mean, like you said, how things would have been different if you hadn't picked up that hitchhiker back when it was still safe to pick up hitchhikers.
You know, and I never, even then, I didn't hardly ever pick up hitchhikers occasionally. But there was something that compelled me to pick this guy up.
Wow.
And, you know, how would I have ever met Murphy? In those years, I jumped. I mean, you know, how they say leap in the net will appear. Well, I did it. I quit school.
Yeah.
I went out there. I was footloose and fancy free and figuring, you know, the next day would bring me something. And it did.
That takes a lot of guts, man. I commend you for that. And I think we're all so thrilled that you took the path that that you did. Now, just real quick before we move off of that topic with all this stuff that you did with Michael Murphy, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about this whole Cosmic Cowboy thing. There are stories out there that say that there was one night where you said to Michael, I just want to be a Cosmic Cowboy. Did that actually happen?
We came back to Texas, and we made the record Geronimo's Cadillac, and we went off to tour, and we were in New York City one night, and we played the Bitter End, the famous folk club.
Oh, right.
You know, everybody played.
Yeah.
Murphy and I were up on the roof of, we were staying at the Holiday Inn there in Manhattan, and we were up on the roof, and he had his guitar, and I had mine, and he had called me Cosmic Bob.
Okay.
For some reason. And he actually even made a belt for me and hand-tooled it, Cosmic Bob.
Oh, that's
cool. Let's go have it somewhere.
Oh, nice.
We'll go on eBay.
Yeah.
So that word was sort of out there. And so as we were sitting on the roof and looking at the stars and looking at Manhattan, it was this incredible sight. And Cosmic Cowboy somehow came up, whether I said,
sure,
I just want to be. I've actually heard Murphy say that.
Okay.
And I cannot recall me, you know, in all fairness, saying I just want to be a Cosmic Cowboy.
Well,
but
sure.
I think that word was being bannered about somehow, and he started writing it.
Okay.
Wrote it that night.
I think a lot of people were curious about that, and I wanted to hear that straight from your mouth. That's fascinating.
Cosmic and Cowboy was definitely out there already.
I just want to be a Cosmic Cowboy.
Livingston is my guest tonight on 88.9 KETR's Notably Texan. A reminder, he's performing Saturday night at Harmony House in Ravenna. Now, I think it was in the early 1970s that you ended up moving back to Texas and planning in Austin, if I understand the chronology correctly. And I think that this was the time when you joined a backing band along with some guys that not everybody had heard of at the time, like Gary P. Nunn, who you mentioned earlier, and some other notable folks. And this band played with the likes of Michael Murphy and Ray Wiley Hubbard and Jerry Jeff Walker. I know we could spend the entire interview talking strictly about this group, but I was hoping you could give me sort of the synopsis of the Los Gonzo Band.
We moved back to Texas with Murphy. We got a record deal. We did this Geronimo's Cadillac, and suddenly we decided on Austin. I had never, you know, I had been through here, and of course Murphy had, and we just loved the idea of Austin.
Sure.
And so we moved here. And Murphy's a pretty intense guy, and I was kind of freaking out in a way, and I just wanted to, you know, I was real restless. Even though we had recorded this album, Murphy and I were not necessarily getting along all that well because he's just such an intense guy, and his career was really jumping. Things were happening, you know. He's a real meticulous planning kind of guy, and suddenly all this stuff is happening. And so I had actually told Murphy that I wanted to move on. I was going to go play with this guy, Ray Wiley Hubbard. He had asked me to play in his band, bass. And the band was called Texas Fever. So I took off. And the last night that I played was at a club called Castle Creek. And in the audience were all these Austin musicians that had heard about Murphy. They were all rockers. Gary Nunn, Leonard Arnold, John Inman, all those folks were there. Rusty Weir.
Wow.
And just were blown away. Because here was a guy that wrote brilliant songs and was playing his own material.
Right.
And the crowd, you could hear a pin drop.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
And these rockers were not used to that.
Sure.
They, and like Gary later said, you know, I looked at Murphy and I thought, God, you know, well, I've got songs I've written. I wish I could do this kind of thing, play for people and have them listen like that.
Yeah.
What ended up happening that night is Gary is sitting there on the front row looking, and I'm just making me nervous as all get out, because the last time I'd seen him was, you know, back on stage in Lubbock, the great Gary Nunn playing in the world's greatest rock and roll band, the Fabulous Sparkles.
Yeah.
And so gave him my notice, and Murphy asked Gary, he said, I hear you're a bass player. Would you like to join the band? So Gary suddenly was with Murphy. I go off with Hubbard for several months.
Okay.
And Bob Johnson, who had produced Geronimo's Cadillac, really liked me. He told Murphy, whatever you got to do, you got to get Livingston back in the band.
Really?
So Murphy called, said, hey, man, we want you back. So I joined up. The band at this point, which was the Cosmic Cowboy Orchestra, was Gary Nunn, who was suddenly playing bass, and I'm coming back in a bass player.
Weird.
Now, Gary was really a keyboard player, played organ, B3 organ in a lot of the rock bands. So Gary and I worked it out where I would play bass on songs that I had done. He would play bass. We traded off bass. Whoever wasn't playing bass would play piano or organ or mandolin or whatever, and that was sort of an interchangeable aspect of the band. You know, we would switch instruments a lot, and the steel player was Herb Steiner, who had come from Los Angeles, so he's there. We had met Craig Hillis, who was a guitar player up in Colorado, and he was just this, you know, he's from Austin, I think, originally, and he'd living in Colorado, and he moved down there, and then Michael McGarry, who had played with me in Texas Fever, I brought him as a drummer. So suddenly, here is this nucleus of a band, me, Gary Nunn, Craig Hillis, Herb Steiner, and Michael McGarry, five guys, and Murphy. We had a rehearsal one day. And in the rehearsal, I had met Jerry Jeff back in Red River. Ironically enough, he had showed up in Red River and written a bunch of songs. High Hill Country Rain, Charlie Dunn, Old Beat Up Guitar, and had compiled a bunch of other stuff that Guy Clark had written. Desperado's Waiting for a Train, mm-hmm. L.A. Freeway.
Right.
And so he had these songs, and he came to the rehearsal and said, hey, what he saw was an instant band.
Sure.
And it sounded great and funky and just what he wanted. So we made a record for him. And when we made that record, it was just called Jerry Jeff Walker, and it had all those songs on it. It was on MCA. Murphy was on A&M. And these were two nationally released albums coming out of Austin, which had been, I don't know if it had ever happened.
Right.
You know, these were two Austin groups that had national attention. When we would go back, we'd play with Jerry Jeff, we'd play with Murphy. We'd go a tour with Jerry Jeff. A lot of times we'd play double tours and we'd do double duty. We'd play with both Murphy and Jerry Jeff. And at some point, we had made Murphy's second record. This is 1972 now.
Okay.
All that other stuff kind of happened in 71 when we first moved to Austin. But at 72, we went to Nashville to cut Murphy's second record. It was called Cosmic Cowboy Souvenir. And the band broke up once and for all. And we all headed back to Texas to join back up with Jerry Jeff for good.
Okay.
Everybody but Gary P. Nunn. Gary decided to stick it out with Murphy a little while longer.
Okay.
And they went to London to mix the album at Abbey Road Studios.
Nice.
And so that was cool. But Gary was left alone after that, and he was wandering the streets. It was freezing cold, the worst winter in 20 years in Europe.
Man.
And Gary sat in his apartment one day that they put him in. They had turned all the steam heaters off in the whole apartment block to get people out on the street and working during the day. And Gary was shivering, and he picked up his guitar, and first thing that came out was, it's cold over here.
And
I swear, I wish they'd turn the heat on. And that song, from such a depressed place, became the London Homesick Blues.
Wow.
And so he comes back, and he's quitting the music business.
Sure.
Meanwhile, we're getting ready to record in this little German abandoned town of Luckenbach, Texas.
Okay.
And with Jerry Jeff, and Gary's going on back to Lubbock to go into pharmacy school. We grabbed him and said, Gary, you can't do that yet. Come down and have fun with us. And so at some point during the week, he played that song. That night, Jerry Jeff, after L.A. Freeway or something, when we made the live recording at the end of the week, said, play that song you play about London. And Gary played that. We had never rehearsed it once, and it blew the roof off.
Wow.
And so that record gets recorded,
uh-huh.
And it's in the can. We're playing these gigs with Jerry Jeff. We're going and showing up places. We come up with different names every night. And I usually introduced us. Jerry Jeff Walker and the Hoodlums of Love. You know? Jerry Jeff Walker and the Rodeo-Dee-O-Dee Riff Raff. Another name was the Blue Bonnet Plague.
I love it.
That's a good one. But finally, I was reading Hunter Thompson, of course, is Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and
yes.
Gonzo this, Gonzo that. And as we were driving to the gig at Castle Creek, I said, hey, let's be the Gonzo Band. We'll be the Lost Gonzo Band. And somehow, you know, it wasn't even going to be any more than any, you know, the Bluebonnet. It could have been the Bluebonnet Plague.
Right.
But, you know, that name, Gonzo, stuck. Because if there was any Gonzo character on the face of the earth besides Hunter Thompson, it was Jerry Jeff Walker. Just went right into his persona. And so suddenly, we were the Lost Gonzo Band.
And it's so interesting to know that you'd had so many other names leading up to that, and it's always interesting to know how some of these band names actually get coined.
Oh, you know, a lot of times we'd take names when we played with Hubbard, took two cowboy hats, and in one hat we put, you know, adjectives and adverbs,
okay.
modifying words, and the other hat we put nouns and pronouns and other weird words. We'd come up with, like, the ice water enema. No, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
There was a lot of really crazy stuff, but we pulled out Texas Fever, and that's how we got our name.
I wouldn't be surprised if somebody opts to maybe reuse some of those, because those are some incredible band names that you guys used to
go
by.
It'll cost you a six-pack of beer.
Well, that's a pretty good deal, I think. We're talking to Bob Livingston tonight on Notably Texan. Bob, you've, of course, got tons of your own releases. You've also been featured on many other artists' albums, the likes of Butch Hancock and Pat Green and some of your old buddies like Ray Wiley, and most frequently by Jerry Jeff Walker, who we've been talking about here recently on the interview. I was thinking we could check out a couple of songs from Jerry Jeff Walker's releases that you've been involved in. I was going to play Life's Too Short and Gonzo Compadres. Any insight on those tunes that you wanted to give us before we spin them?
Well, Life's Too Short, I believe that Keith Sykes and Jerry Jeff and Freddie Kurch wrote that. And then the other one,
Gonzo Compadres.
We were in Santa Cruz playing one night. We had played a beautiful wine festival, and there was a guy out in the audience with a parrot on his shoulder. So we saw this parrot, and he brought it backstage, and so we got our dose of the parrot.
Uh-huh.
And that night, we were staying in some motels right along this little river stream kind of thing that runs through Santa Cruz. It was just a beautiful spot, and we had our guitars, and we were out there picking, and the owner of this hotel also has a parrot, and he comes up, and he's got this parrot, and he puts it on my shoulder. And so I'm sitting there singing, and I start going, they call us the Gonzo Compadres. And we had this Spanish guy there and said, how do you say five friends watching the stars? And he goes, oh, let's see, call us the Gonzo Compadres, cinco caballeros, mirandas las estrellas, or something like that.
Okay.
You know? So it's like five friends watching the stars. So we had that much, we did it, and then Freddie Kurch threw in the line, says, and we love our mommies.
Yes.
Really stupid. But it all made us laugh, so we thought everybody else would too. So we ended up on the plane ride back home. Jerry Jeff, you know, we flew in private planes, different kinds. Landed in flames more than I care to admit.
Oh, man.
Really wild times on these little planes. We were coming back. We finished that song, and Jerry Jeff loved it. You know, we used to do it every night.
That is so cool. Let's check out Gonzo Compadres and Life's Too Short. These are recordings by Jerry Jeff Walker, featuring tonight's guest here on Notably Texan, Bob Livingston. More coming up with Bob. You're listening to Notably Texan on 88.9 KETR.
Lately I'm feeling lousy all the time. I picked up and sat down, tried to figure out why. I had it whittled down to a page or two, and the paper trail led me straight to you. I see life's too short to put up with things you do. Spell you cast been messing with my sanity. Call me thy baby while you're sticking them pins in me. But I figure if I'm finally over you, cause I see right through that who do you do, and life's too short to be involved with a witch like you. Life's too short to get in a rut. Life's too short to get a bad haircut. Life's too short to be this long.
Life too short to admit that you're wrong. Life too short to wear tight shoes. Life too short to be blue. Life too short to be involved with a girl like you. When I walked out, I'll be free as a man can be. As funky as a monkey swinging high in a jungle tree. And if that lion asks for you, or the monkey asks, or the elephant too, I'll send you back home there caged up in your zoo. 'Cause life's too short for cheap guitars. Life's too short to smoke cheap cigars. I'll get your kicks from deadbeat chicks, but chewing gum down at the end of the bar. Life's too short for steamship crews. Life's too short to be blue. Life too short to be involved with someone like you. Yeah, life's too short to brush and floss. Life's too short to sleep with the boss. Six-way lights or disco bars, or trying to pick up chicks in a compact car. Life's too short for a bad tattoo. Life's too short to be blue. Life's too short to be involved with a guy like you. Yeah, life's too short to be involved with someone like you. Your life's too short to be involved with someone like you.
Hi, this is Bob Livingston, and you're listening to Matt Menke's show, Notably Texan, right here on 88.9 KETR Radio.
And they call us the Gonzo, the Gonzo compadres, Los Cinco Caballeros. Mirando La Estrella, and they call us the Gonzo, the Gonzo compadres, Los Gatos con Queso, and we love our mommies.
We live by the mountains, we live by the sea, we live by our wits, we live to be free. We never take prisoners, we take no requests. What we do mostly is what we do best.
And they call us the Gonzo, Gonzo, Gonzo compadre, Los Cinco Caballeros, Mirando Los Estrella. And we love our mommies.
We laugh and we cry and we sing and we dance.
See, see.
We fly through the air by the seat of our pants. With Captain Conejo, tequila in hand, we fall to our knees and kiss the ground when we land.
It's true.
And they call us the Gonzo, the Gonzo compadres, Los Cinco Caballeros, Mirando Los Estrella. And they call us the Gonzo,
Gonzo,
Gonzo compadres, Los Gatos con Queso.
Brave compañeros, we ride beyond fences. We take to the road, taking leave of our senses. Adios, amigo, so long, señorita. Your salty tears flavor our margarita.
And they call us the Gonzo,
Gonzo,
the Gonzo compadre, Los Cinco.
Caballero, Mirando Los Estrella, and they call us the Gonzo.
Bob Livingston is talking with me tonight on Notably Texan. This is 88.9 KETR. Your 2011 album, Gypsy Alibi, received some much-deserved critical acclaim. I wondered if you wanted to mention the award that it received.
Well, it won the Album of the Year of the Texas Music Awards, and whatever that means. It's nice to be recognized, though. And I used to tell everybody, in my show, I say, this is nominated for the Album of the Year, and I could come back the next year and say it's nominated for the Album of the Year. I could do this for several years,
yeah,
and you'd never know. You know, you'd think that was cool. Problem with that scenario is I actually won the album.
So dang it.
It's got a half-life, you know. I'm going to have to come up with something new now, dang it.
Right.
It's a song. I wrote a lot of the songs. I've gone to India several times, and I wrote a lot of this material there, even though it's a lot more country than the record before.
No, but it's really eclectic, though, too. I was going to say I really enjoy the eclectic nature of the album. It's got a bit of country, but a little bit of Western swing, a dash of rockabilly, and it all mixes up to make this delectable dish called Gypsy Alibi. It's just delicious.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I play a lot of the songs off that record, and then my other one, Original Spirit, was the record before this. It used to be called Mahatma Gandhi and Sitting Bull. That was the name of the album.
Really?
You know, I knew I'd made a big mistake when I was in Lubbock on KDAV. I can't remember the guy's name, the DJ. Just a real country guy,
okay.
A great old station, you know. And that was Bob Livingston and his new album, Mahatma Gandhi. You know, and I just knew, hey, this ain't gonna fly.
Not without a pronunciation guide on there,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. I changed the name of it. But
well, that's funny.
I just love all kinds of music, and I cannot be pigeonholed into one genre. I have plenty of country music chops and folk music chops and rock chops and stuff, and I also play this, you know, I've done several tours to India for the State Department.
Yes.
And a lot of that traveling, especially traveling in India, has informed my songwriting and just as much the feel as anything else. So.
I bet. That is fascinating. I was going to touch on that here in just a little bit, because I think that's such an interesting aspect of your music career. And in fact, when we come back from playing this tune, why don't we talk about that? I was going to play the title cut from Gypsy Alibi. I think that's a really, really great tune. It's quite beautiful, got a lot of complex instrumentation in it. Just really enjoyed that one.
I had had this song around a long time. I had written it on the piano, and it had this kind of Gershwin-esque melody to it. So I would play it from time to time, and I was trying to write. I had Gypsy Alibi drives me crazy. You ain't no gypsy, you just lazy. I had that line, and I was trying to figure out what to write it about, but I could never finish it. And then before I made this record, when I was writing the rest of the stuff for this, my son, Tucker, who's a really fine guitar player, but is currently living in India, playing Indian music. He's playing this instrument called the Veena, and he's learning all about that. And so he was living over there, and I went to, visit him, and he says, it's a shame that we haven't written a song together. And he said, we should finish something like Gypsy Alibi. And I go, well, God, do you have any ideas?
Uh-huh.
And he just started throwing out these kind of carnivalesque, really interesting rhymes, just interesting allusions to Carnival and the Los Gonzo Band and being on the road with Jerry Jeff and stuff. It just kind of, it paints this picture of a carnival, and that's what it was, and that's where this song came from.
Well, it's a great one. Let's check it out. The title cuts from the Bob Livingston album Gypsy Alibi on Notably Texan. You're listening to 88.9 KETR.
gypsy alibi drives me crazy. You ain't no gypsy, you're just lazy. Fortune teller, Madam Wu, hear her laughing in the back room. All those knots on the caravan, Queen of Hearts, Jack of Diamonds. Robert and the Fat Man, Paper Tiger, she's just dancing. Major Domo in the spotlight. All the clowns come out at midnight. Looping loose in the motel room, all you ever had was the light of the moon. Gypsy alibi, thin as silver. Lost musicians, hall of mirrors. Phantom shadow in your eyes. Is my reflection in disguise? All those knots on the caravan, hourglass dreams running out of sand.
We're talking with Texas own Bob Livingston tonight on Notably Texan. Bob, you've done quite a bit of work internationally, as we alluded to a little bit earlier. You've acted as an ambassador of American music, which is really fascinating. Not every artist that I talk to has the luxury of getting to do that. And so basically this has taken you out on travels all around the world, basically kind of sharing American music with some interesting cultures out there, right?
Absolutely. I had always been interested in India and went there on my own. Met a fellow American. His name was Frank Block. He was a Fulbright scholar who the State Department had put on the road giving workshops and lectures in legal aid. He was a professor at Vanderbilt.
Okay.
And he told me, if you can convince the State Department you're an expert in anything from legal aid to country music, you may be able to get a gig.
Okay.
Which was a surprise to me.
Sure.
And so John Inman, great guitar player, was also in India. We were both there just seeing it. I arranged it. We went to Madras, auditioned, so to speak. And really, it was just a chance to go, here we are, you know, because otherwise you're going to go through a bunch of legal channels and have to go back to America and send them all kinds of stuff. And either be chosen or not. And here was a chance for us to just play right on the spot. And we played for the perfect guy. His name was Timothy Moore. And, you know, he at first he was real deadpan, and we saying, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a history of American folk and country music, and I'm going to start out with the Appalachian music that came over from England, and I'm going to build it on up, and I'm going to go on into folk music in the 50s and 60s, and we'll do country music, and yada, yada. And he goes, well, let's see what you got. And I play a song, and he just looks at me, just stares at me, doesn't say a word, totally noncommittal. And I just go, oh, okay. And then halfway through the second song, he stops me, and he says, hey, do you mind? And he reached down and pulled out a banjo, and he said, I've been waiting for you guys to walk through this door for a long time.
Really?
And he just said, look, I'll put you on the road if I can sit in every once in a while. He was just kind of saying, he loved us. So in 86, this was 85, in 86, we came back, played 60 cities in India. And then John went on back, and I ended up going into Pakistan, Nepal, Bangladesh, several trips.
Wow.
And now have gone up 30 countries for the State Department. Went all over the Middle East, Africa, Vietnam. Unbelievable.
Man.
Experience in Vietnam. A wonderful experience. Our U.S. State Department representatives are totally spot on. They're really smart. They know the countries that they're going into. As far as I can see it, they represent us absolutely well. Now, these are the career public service officers.
Yes.
The guys that no matter what administration is in, they do their job. And
right.
they toe the line for whatever. You know, they use this, what they call cultural programming, to get a crowd. And we would go in to play some, you know, town and play in their best auditorium. And the PA is about the size of a transistor radio back in those days. And play some. Be packed, and it's like the Americans are here. What is this country music? What are they talking about?
Sure.
I would tell them stories. I became a storyteller through that experience because I would give them the background of the stories.
Wow.
And I remember one time I did this song, Don't Bury Me on the Lone Prairie. You know that.
Uh-huh.
Don't bury me on the lone prairie. And you get them all singing along. And of course, it's, I put them in the scene. You're a young cowboy. You're out on the on the prairie on your first cattle drive, and a cobra jumps up from behind a bush and bites you right between the eyes, and you fall down there. You're about dead, and you have this last wish. And so you do the song, and they all singing along. They've never heard anything like it.
Yes.
And this woman came backstage afterward. She said, you know, that song you did about that poor young cowboy, and you had to leave his body on the prairie. That is just too sad. You tell me one thing. Is there no way you could go back and get his body and bring it home so he could be buried as he wished? He absolutely took it serious. As soon as that happened, I just realized we got him, because they never heard of Willie Nelson or Hank Williams.
Sure.
They didn't know anything about country music. You know, if there's anything about American culture or America, just to anything that the world wants to know about, it's our music, our art, our dance, photography, all the arts.
Yes. I understand that one of the kind of resounding themes when you are doing these international music tours is, amongst other things, teaching the audience how to kind of play along to some songs that are popular with us that they've never heard. One of the ones you always like to do is that Buddy Holly tune, Not Fade Away.
Oh, yeah. I would do that, and I would tell them that story. You know, I went to Lubbock High School, and I had this connection with Buddy Holly, I thought, and we had the same English teacher in a way, because at the beginning of her career, Miss Honey taught Buddy Holly, and at the end of her career, she got me. on Gypsy Alibi, there is a track of Not Fade Away. And the way that came to be is I was in Bangladesh, and I'm playing with this incredible tabla player. You know, the tabla is this, if you've ever seen Ravi Shankar, he plays a sitar, but the drummer plays this instrument called a tabla, T-A-B-L-A. It is, you know, these two small drums, and it's just, they can make them talk. It's the most incredible sound.
Yes.
And when I would go there, I would always play with local musicians in any country I was going to. And I'd say, look, we're going to do this experiment in East and West relations. And they go, no, you can't do that. We don't understand your music. You don't understand ours. You just play songs. We'll play songs. No, I'm telling you, it'll work. No, different modes, different time signatures. It doesn't going to work. I say, well, and I start going, thump, pump, thump, 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 which is that Bo Diddley, Buddy Holly, primal beat. And as soon as they hear that, they go, oh, well, that beat, I know that. You know, well, I could play that. So suddenly that was the icebreaker. Then they realized they could play anything, you know, with me. And it's just me, you know, just kind of playing, you know, and they would play along. Islamabad, Pakistan once, I played with this sarangi player, this 40-string bowed instrument. And this guy, we did a workshop at the Islamic Heritage Folklife Center, and this guy couldn't speak a word of English. Of course, I couldn't speak a word of Urdu.
Sure.
And I said, it's really great that he can follow along with what I do, because there's no way I could do what he does. What he said back to me through a translator was, tell this man he speaks the truth.
That is so cool. I mean, music just completely skips right by that language barrier, you know. I think that's amazing.
And the political barrier.
Yes.
And every barrier. And that's why the State Department does this. And I swear, music does, it's a cliche, but it does break down these barriers. You know?
I believe that. I believe, and you've seen that firsthand. I want to play that final cut here from Gypsy Alibi, which is a recording of Not Fade Away that was made in Bangladesh, and this was recorded in 1991. Let's take a listen to this, and we'll get an idea of what Bob's been describing on these international music tours. Not Fade Away, Bob Livingston on Notably Texan.
Now, you know, we're going to do this song here. I was actually raised in Lubbock, Texas. There was a boy. His name was Buddy Holly. And Buddy would probably love this idea of having his songs done all over India and Pakistan and Bangladesh. And we've had tabla, we've had these experiments placed before, and it kind of works out pretty good. And this is a song that Buddy Holly wrote probably, well, you can imagine he was in senior high at Lubbock High School, and there was this beautiful young girl across the aisle from him, and he kept looking at her all year long, but he couldn't ever get up the courage to say anything to her, so he went home and he wrote this song about her as how big his love was for her. And so we're going to try it here. How it's gonna be. You're gonna give your love to me. Love to last both night and day. Love is real and not fade away. Love is love and not fade away. what happened was, Buddy Holly, he went home, and he's trying to come up with the perfect line to describe how big his love was for this young girl. I mean, it was as big as the Himalayas, you know, but that wasn't good enough. And he searched all night long. He listened to Ravi Shankar for inspiration. And then he came up with this, which I think is one of the greatest rock and roll lines ever written today. I don't see how it ever can be topped, because he came up with something to describe how big and how beautiful and how wonderful his love was for this young girl in his math class, you know what I mean? He said, my love is bigger than a Cadillac. I try to show you, but you're driving me back, baby. Your love for me got to be real. Feels, baby. Love is love and not fade away. Love is real and not fade away. 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 Yes.
We're back with Bob Livingston. You're listening to 88.9 KETR's Notably Texan. You've got a show coming up Saturday at the Harmony House in Ravenna. This is a really cool thing that not everybody is familiar with. This is a new way that people are getting their music live, is at these what are called house concerts. This is not a totally new thing, but how are you enjoying the whole house concert style of performing for folks?
Well, in a way, it's changed everything. The house concerts have revolutionized the folk circuit. You can have a group of people anywhere from 20 to 75 or even 100, and you can the artists can come in. The house concert hosts know their audience, and will, even if the people on their mailing list have never heard of you, they educate them, and then they say, okay, well, I trust Faye,
right?
Who is here, and so they'll come out just by her word,
exactly,
and usually have a great show. And there's two sets. They've got food. They put the artist up. They put me up, and I get up in the morning to make breakfast, and have the breakfast, and go on to the next gig. So I do a lot of them on the East Coast, and where I'll line up Friday, Saturday, and even Sunday, and do a matinee on Sunday, and and then the hardest gigs to book are Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays out on the road. But you can get clubs, or even we do a thing now called Dinner and a Song.
Oh, really?
And if any of your listeners ever wanted to participate in this house concert, just give me a call. Go to my website, boblivingston.org, and you too could have me come to your house and play for you. And it doesn't really cost anything, because the audience chips in. They kind of pay a cover charge, and
right,
it all goes to the musician. But they have this thing called Dinner and a Song that's during the weekday. Maybe you're going to invite 10 or 12 folks over, and you'll have them dinner. And then I'll come out and after the dinner and, no PA, no nothing, just sitting around the table and play a set.
It's something that I think most people would never even dream was a possibility, to be able to have that intimate of a setting with a performer that they know of. I just think it's really cool.
And, so many people are doing it. John Prine does house concerts. Jerry Jeff Walker does house concerts. Of course, the ticket may be $150
right,
or something, but the fact is, if the money is there, these guys will go to it. But for guys like me, this is our bread and butter, playing house concerts, folk festivals, folk clubs, that kind of thing. And I also do a lot of schools. I have that one thing we didn't talk about is the Cowboys and Indians.
Yes, please.
Show that I do, which is sponsored by the Texas Commission on the Arts. We go and we play schools, so I do a lot of schools. Whatever you can do to make a living in the music business, play kid shows, play house concerts.
Yeah.
I do session work. I do voiceover work on the radio sometimes and for commercials. And
do you really?
And,
that's
but
cool.
These Chaos Concerts, I love. And I love Harmony House especially. It's just this incredible scene, beautiful out in the country, and it's just a wonderful spot. And you meet fellow music lovers that are all there just to enjoy the music, and they listen, and you swap. You know, a lot of times they bring their own, bring guitars, and there's a big song swap at the end of it. So it's very cool.
I think it is. It's just amazing. And like I said, it seems like a brand new thing to me, but I know it's been going on for years. But I think people out there are still learning about this whole house concerts thing. And we've got a, you know, perfect example right here in Northeast Texas that has been hosting a lot of these house concerts. It's had some great names over in Ravenna. So it's really fantastic to have you making a stop right here in our own backyard. You mentioned some of these interesting offshoots. I believe you did a children's album as well.
I did Open the Window. It's on Gentle Wind Records out of Albany, New York.
Cool.
And I had written a bunch of songs and sent it to them, and they said, let's do it. So we went and recorded this. And it's, you know, you always have these kids that are about that age, and it's some really good stuff. You can Google that, too, Gentle Wind. Open the Window, Bob Livingston. But I encourage you to, all your listeners and you too, Matt, to go to my website and skate around. There's a lot of great photographs and stuff of a lot of my adventures and travels and a lot of information on there. So, and I'm just continuing to put it out and work.
No, that's wonderful, man. You do have a great website. I definitely encourage folks to check that out. There's a lot to check out there, and you're just an incredibly interesting guy, and really appreciate getting an opportunity to talk to you for the first time here on Notably Texan, Bob.
Well, thank you, man. It's been a pleasure. And
hey,
thanks a lot.
I really appreciate your time. Our guest tonight has been Bob Livingston. You can find him online. His latest album is Gypsy Alibi, and just a treasure of Texas music to be found by this gentleman out there. Thanks again, Bob. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Matt.
This Notably Texan feature interview has been a production of 88.9 KETR, your station. We simply could not bring you features like this were it not for contributions from our listeners. Please do your part to keep the music and interviews coming with a donation right now. Visit KETR.org, click Support This Station, and give what you can. I'm your host and producer, Matt Minke, saying thanks for listening.